This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm B.A. Parker. These past few months, I feel like I've been watching these really involved stories about families of color finding ways to heal their generational wounds or to see their ancestors as people. From the animated films Encanto and Turning Red to the recent miniseries Ms. Marvel, one movie like this that really struck me is Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is about a mother, played by Michelle Yeoh, who travels across the multiverse to save her daughter and discovers different versions of her family. These stories are helmed mostly by millennials of color.
And core to the idea of them is a bad parent who apologizes eventually, and that apology kind of fixes everything.
That's Emily St. James, an entertainment critic at Vox. She writes about how family relationships, queerness, and the trans experience are portrayed on screen. And recently, she wrote about this subgenre I'm talking about, which she calls the millennial parent apology fantasy.
One of the things I think marks it as a subgenre is it's very interested in questions of intersectionality. It's interested in questions of how does bad parenting, how does that intersect with the immigrant experience? How does that intersect with race? How does that intersect with queerness? And then also an interest in intergenerational trauma.
Emily and I talk about the shift in perspective in the way families are portrayed, how it came to be, what its limits are, and how it could bring about new kinds of stories about family and trauma.
There are so many children who need apologies from their parents, and it's not just those of us born between the years of 1980 and 1995.
Exactly. But like it's that old adage, was it like, kids are waiting to hear I'm sorry and parents are waiting to hear thank you?
Exactly, yes. And I think that we have had movies that are literally the parent waiting to say thank you. And then like there's like a nod toward, well, maybe the parent wasn't always great. And then the parent's like, oh, I'm sorry. And then the kid's like, thank you for buying me a pound puppy when I was 4. But now I think we are skewing in the opposite direction. And I think that that is a necessary overcorrection. But I think that that fantasy, as all fantasies, has a different set of blinders on that we sort of need to account for.
What makes it a fantasy when so much of it reflects many of our everyday experiences and emotions?
I think what makes it a fantasy is the idea that when the parent apologizes, it fixes 90% of what's wrong. And I think where Everything Everywhere All at Once really gets into the problems with that fantasy is in its depiction of the ways that and here I'm going to have to get into the plot of the movie, which is
by
very complicated.
Go for it.
So the movie is about this woman named Evelyn, and she has a daughter named Joy, who's gay and has a girlfriend and constantly feels like her mother is just too hard on her.
You are getting fat, and you never call me, even though we have a family plan. And it's free. You only visit when you need something.
Now, it is a thing that can be repaired, and it needs to start with an apology, but that can't be where it stops. So I think what the film is smart about is it's smart about, A, the fantasy of any given sin can be covered up by an apology, when we know that's not true. We know there are things a parent can do that are so abusive and so horrible that the child is right to cut them out of their life. But also the apology is sort of, you know, if you are a child, that your parent can apologize to you and make it all better. And I'm not going to spoil it, but one thing I love about the ending of this movie, which is very open to interpretation, is that it leaves you with the space to sort of say, okay, where do they go now? Like, how do they move past the fact that they both understand everything they're capable of? And I think that that is a really smart exploration of this idea. But yes, the fantasy is fundamentally that an apology can make everything okay.
Coming up, why stories about family relationships and trauma are coming from millennials. Stay with us.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Here's a familiar situation. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we have very important people on our show and then ask them about very unimportant things. Here's U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen.
We are also reliably informed that among your enthusiasms, in addition to macroeconomic policy, is mobile games.
There is some truth in that.
There's some truth in that.
Join us for the NPR podcast that considers all the other things. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
You mentioned this earlier about like this cultural shift primarily like driven by younger audiences. And I'm wondering, why are these stories being written and produced primarily by millennials?
I do think that we are living in a time when millennials are taking over the film and television industries to a real degree. And, you know, they're having kids. And when you have kids, you look at the world and very differently because you suddenly are at the other end of this power dynamic where you have an enormous amount of power because, you know, the child needs you in the very specific meaning of the word need. And that really shifts your perspective. But I do think that also millennials of the generations of Americans making art are by far the most diverse. Gen Z is going to come and supplant us entirely. But, you know, you have a lot more voices of color making films. You have a lot more women making films. You have a lot more queer people making films. And all of that sort of filtering in.
Oh, I'm just thinking now, like while watching Mitchell's versus the Machines, like the list of all of the babies that were born during the creation of that film. I was like, oh, yeah, I get it now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. A pretty common thing in these animated films, like Pixar does that for every one of its movies. And I think they probably started the trend. And like Pixar is an interesting case in point because you look back at their earliest films and they are very much from the point of view of, we are dads and we have kids and we're going to write about how sad we are that our kids are growing up. And then they slowly transition into, they start being movies about communities. In a weird way, almost, the Toy Story movies perfectly graph onto this.
I'm still Andy's favorite toy.
Because the first is like from 1994 and now we're like...
Yeah, it's 95, 99, 2010... and 2019. And the first two are just very much about like grown-ups kind of setting aside childish things, but also trying to celebrate their children and give their children better lives. And they're about toys that were popular when the people who made that first film were kids, you know, cowboy toys and Mr. Potato Head and all of these things. But then you get to 2010, and 2010 is this movie about how like, okay, the only way we're going to get through this, and this is sort of implicitly understood as death or the apocalypse or the end of everything.
Boss! Hold on, I'm coming!
The most existential film I have seen. I sobbed in the theater, could not do.
Yeah, no, I had a very similar reaction. But it's very much a movie about, okay, we need to come together. We need to figure all of this out. And that is a movie made by people who are, you know, less tied to children, whether because they're younger or because their kids have grown up and like gone off to college. And it is a movie about community building, which was a very big storytelling trend in the 2010s and continues to this day. I don't want to pretend it just stopped in 2019. But the Toy Story 4 has elements of the parental apology fantasy in it, in that like Woody, the cowboy, has some things he needs to apologize for. And he is like the movie's surrogate dad in many ways.
No, no, no. We are wasting time. We can do this.
Nobody wants this.
I do.
Why?
Because.
Why?
Just because.
Why?
Because it's all I have left to do.
And like that is a major point of the story. It is not by any means a millennial parental apology fantasy. It's too far removed, but it like has echoes with it. So the Toy Story franchise is the keystone of American storytelling.
You know what? I believe this, Emily.
We did it.
Up next, what a spin on these family stories could look like. Stick with us.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy.
We talk about this evolution of Toy Story, but what other avenues could this genre open up? Like, what are other types of movies or media, like, do you imagine or want to see coming off of this?
I think that there will probably be more forthright examinations because of this of toxicity and abuse. I don't want to suggest that that has never happened. There have been many projects that have talked about that, but I think the fantastical nature necessarily opens itself up to interrogation of broken family dynamics. And so I think we're going to head into that. And a movie I point to is kind of on the cusp of this, but it doesn't ever feature any apologies, so it technically doesn't qualify, but it's Ari Aster's Hereditary.
Try again, release yourself.
Oh, release you mean?
Yeah, fine, release me. Just
don't you ever raise your voice at me. I am your mother.
Which is a movie about a horribly broken family where, you know, there's intergenerational trauma. There needs to be some sort of apology. One never comes. Everybody dies. So I think you're going to see a lot more of this trickle into horror. And I think you're already seeing that happen. But horror is going to get a little bit more into, no, there are some things that are so broken that an apology won't cover them up. One place I think the millennial parental apology fantasy could go is it could end with the dissolution of the family unit. It could end with a thing where the parent says, I'm sorry, and the kid says, thank you, that's not enough. And they go off and find a found family that makes them feel more themselves. And you see some of this. Weirdly, again, Toy Story 4 features elements of this. The Toy Story films.
Exactly.
They're everywhere. You know, that is a thing where we still, when we get right up to it and we're like, there are ways that parents can hurt their children that are so awful that we should not ever be mad at a child for wanting to cut their parent out. And then at the end of the story, we're like, yeah, but you know what? It's good to keep the family unit together. But, you know, Everything Everywhere All at Once, when I left that theater the first time, I had real trouble with it because I was like, is this movie trying to excuse the abuse that scientist Evelyn did by saying, you know, well, it was just a broken whatever. And I don't think it is. I ultimately came down on the side of, no, it understands that act was too bad to be forgiven.
Yeah.
But it also understands that every abused child, to some degree, is looking out there for a version of their parents who is better, even if they're not perfect. And Everything Everywhere All at Once, sort of the genius of that movie is it just literalizes that idea by bringing the multiverse in. And I think that's what makes it, that's what's made it so special to so many people.
I mean, I know that you're a critic, but for like the layperson who is enjoying the film or like who's processing the film, do you think there are ways to bring these imaginations into the way we interact with our own family?
I think the thing that is worth living with in these movies is thinking about the relationships in your life where you have been wronged, but also thinking about the people that you have done wrong to and thinking about, are there ways I can make restitution? Are there ways I can exist in the world that are better? And, you know, we are talking a lot in our country, but all around the world, about power dynamics, about privilege, and those are worthwhile conversations to have. And I think that these movies also intersect with those questions because they're asking us to think about, okay, in your interpersonal relationships, what power do you have over your child? What power do you have over your parent? How should those relationships be structured to minimize abuses of power, abuses of privilege? And when you start taking those ideas and filtering them down to the personal level, it becomes very hard to sit with. And I think that that is why these movies exist. They allow us to sit with that idea, with those feelings, and just say, yeah, it's okay to be mad at your parents. Yeah, it's okay to say, oh, I haven't done a great job raising my child and I should apologize. Families are complex organisms and not every element of them will function perfectly all of the time. And the important thing is just to acknowledge when you've done wrong, acknowledge when you've hurt someone, and do your best to make restitution. That is living within the moral universe of there are things that can be solved with an apology. And I just want to be clear, there are a lot of ways that anyone can hurt anyone that cannot be solved with an apology. You know, there are enormous cases of abuse, of assault, of all of these things that should not be swept under the rug. But
for sure,
the core of these movies is just don't hurt people. And I think that that's a thing we can carry forward and think about. And it is worth thinking about the people you have hurt and not just the people who've hurt you.
On that note, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Emily, for joining us today. That I ended it with like a Norman Vincent Peale aphorism or something.
I mean, that's how you do it. Thanks again to Emily St. James. You can find her column at Vox. This episode of It's Been a Minute was produced by Janet Ujung Lee. It was edited by Jessica Mendoza and Quinn O'Toole. Don't forget, this Friday, we'll be back with another episode. And for that, we want to hear the best thing that happened to you all week. All you got to do is record yourself and email the file to us at ibam@npr.org. That's ibam@npr.org. All right, that's it for us. Thanks for listening. I'm B.A. Parker.
This message comes from Schwab. It's easy to invest in ideas you believe in with Schwab Investing Themes, like online music and videos, artificial intelligence, and electric vehicles. Choose from over 40 customizable themes. More at schwab.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.